It's time for America's most unique motorsports show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill, Kirk Elliott sitting in with us as he does each and every Monday. A lot to talk about over this last weekend, a lot to talk about. Today, we're going to have Sam Haferteef Jr. on. He's going to talk to us about his win down at the final race down at I-30 Speedway. He's going to join us here in just a little bit. But for now, we are going to talk about results from this last weekend. Kirk, how you doing, bud? You doing
all right? I'm doing good. It's kind of a bittersweet weekend. We saw a lot of great racing, but a little bit of sadness over the weekend, too, with a lot of different things. So,
yep, no doubt about it.
Anyway, mixed emotions here this morning.
Mixed emotions. Well, let's start off with the sad news, and then we'll work our way up to better stuff, right? Rick Eshelman, unfortunately, has passed away, and it's always tough when you hear somebody pass away, especially of the caliber. He just got inducted into the Late Model Hall of Fame about a month ago, and one of the all-time great voices of dirt late model racing, Rick Eshelman. Kirk, he was on your show, Primetime Live. You did that show for a couple of years, and he was on your show quite often, wasn't he?
Yeah, and boy, he came on every week, and he worked us in. He did the announcing, and he'd call our show, give us updates on what's going on with World of Outlaw late models. Great guy, and man, he'll be missed. And, of course, you know, we watched him up here just a couple of weeks ago call these races for the World of Outlaws. I can't tell you how sad I was when we found out he turned up missing. We reported that on Saturday morning, and then later in the afternoon, we learned the sad news. It's we're devastated over it.
Well, you know, it's sad. You hate it when somebody let's just call it the way it is. He took his own life, and we know that because there's plenty of news out there that said that.
His son posted something on a Twitter page.
His son said that, right?
So yeah. Man, oh, man, it just...
You just never know what somebody's going through, do you, Kirk?
You can't say anything more than what that is. You don't know. You don't know anything other than we know we don't have Rick Eshelman anymore, one of the great announcers. And that's sad.
You just never know what a person's going through privately in their life. I've got my own thoughts on suicide, but I'm not gonna bring them up today. I just think it's it just leaves everybody else sad. You know what I mean? When somebody takes their own life, they get out of their issues that they have, but it leaves everybody else to mourn their loss.
Yeah, you and I have both been through it with close people. Right. You've had family members. I had one of my best friends ever take his own life back in 2014. And, it's a real tough situation. But my thoughts are with the family left behind, and all the best to the Rick Eshelman family. I know his fiance, all the people that are close to him. My thoughts are with them.
Pete just shared a suicide and crisis lifeline. Listen, take a moment, click on that link that Pete just put up there, and take a look at it, and think about what's going on. It's a sad deal. It's a little selfish, but that's just my opinion, and I get it that other people have. They have their reasonings for it, and I just can't get my head around it.
So I can't make any judgments because we don't know what's going on.
We never know what's going on in somebody's life. All right, so it is definitely a sad day. Also, I want to give a shout-out to a guy that I raced against for a long time, one of the great, great ambassadors of I-70 Speedway back when it was a pavement track. Dale Roper passed away last Wednesday, and Dale was 86 years old. He'd been going through some tough times in life, and let me tell you something about Dale Roper. Dale Roper was one hell of a racer. He was so good. And even in his late years in life, when he was still in his 60s, he was still a gasser and was still winning races at I-70 Speedway. I raced with him in the modified division out there at I-70 Speedway and Lakeside a little bit. It's sad to hear about the passing of Dale Roper. He was such a good guy. He'd lost his leg a couple years ago, and he was kind of stuck in a wheelchair, and he wasn't doing very well. So anyway, long story short is, my thoughts are right now with Dale Roper. Really, really good guy, man. Dean Roper, his brother, passed away driving an ARCA car. I think it was Springfield, or was it DeCoin? I can't remember, Kirk. Do you remember?
I can't remember one of those mile
race
tracks.
One of those two tracks, though. But anyway,
we lost Tony Roper, too.
And Tony Roper as well,
But, you know, Dale Roper was such a friend to everybody. Every time I'd go to the racetrack.
Good guy.
I would have a great conversation with him. He talked to everybody. He was a friend to everyone. I'd see him at different functions. And Dale Roper was about as visible a guy and a friend to everybody in racing. Sad news to hear his passing.
Dale Roper was not the kind of guy that would talk crap on anybody.
No,
he was such a good person, man. So it's sad to hear about the passing of Dale Roper and Rick Eshelman as well. Two great people in the world of motorsports, and they're going to be missed for sure. Again, Dale Roper was Tony Roper's uncle.
Yeah.
Right.
Dean was Tony's dad.
His dad. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
great family. Great family racers.
And nothing but great racers across the board. All three of those guys were great racers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, let's move on to something a little bit a little more pleasant, and maybe not so pleasant, Kirk. The closing of I-30 Speedway. We had the final short track nationals this weekend, and I'm going to bring it out here in a little bit. I've got a big, giant dirt clod I picked up and I brought home from I-30 Speedway.
Cool.
Sam Haferchief Jr. picks up the win. He beats Aaron Reitzel at the end of that race. What'd you think of it, Kirk? First of all, hold on. Let's bring Austin in. Austin, what'd you think of that race first?
You know, I wish I could have seen it, you know, firsthand, actually live, but
yeah.
It was actually really good from the replay. We watched it on my race pass on the way home, so I got to see the live timing of it. But
right.
I didn't know. I knew that, you know, Sam and Aaron were kind of going at it. I just didn't know, you know what actually went down. You can just see, you know, them cross the line. But there was plenty of drama, you know, around the race with, you know, with Aaron jumping the cushion in 3 and 4. And I think if Aaron doesn't make that mistake,
back of Sam.
No, because he lost the lead when he jumped the cushion in the 3 and 4. I don't want to say that, you know, he would have maybe won the race still, but, you know, he just gave the lead up. You know, he jumped the cushion, right rear got stuck in there, and Sam just rolled the middle and was gone. And, you know, he got to his bumper, but at that point, now you're in loud traffic, and it's just hard to pass that little rock when it's that narrow. I think if the cushion maybe was a lane higher, you know, we could have maybe seen a big slider out of Aaron that would have stuck. I mean, he slid him, you know, into one that one lap and about wiped his left rear out. But there was just not enough room and not enough speed to get by him. But it was really just a big track position race. And, you know, it was good. I guess maybe that they kept the track the same all three nights. Because, I mean, they put on really good racing. I think if they maybe threw him a curveball, it would have been maybe not that good of a race. But at least guys knew what they needed to do going into that race on their game plan. And, you know, you had to be good in the dash to get, you know, a good starting spot. And, you know, it paid off for the guy starting in the first, two rows.
Mm. Tammy's checking in. She said, good afternoon, boys, from a gloomy, soggy Pennsylvania. Prayers to the Eshelman family. We appreciate that as well.
Yeah, the National Open got wiped out. That was sad.
That was not
good. They're going to reschedule that on the 22nd of October.
We'll get into that here in a minute. But so do you think Reitzel was better than Sam Haferchief? You know, Sam didn't have brakes there at the end of the race, but he's still able to hold him off. What do you think about that?
for Sam to hold him off like that was with no breaks was really good, and just shows how good Sam is. I mean, with that style of track, with it being, you know, short, you know, and the way the cushion was and how it was slick to the cushion, that was just you're going to be on the brakes a lot. And and with, you know, Sam kind of moved down and ran the middle there where it was dirty, and you still need the brakes to kind of hold the car down, and it's tough to do when you don't have them.
Right.
You're really just depending on
you got to back up your corner a little bit.
You got to back your corner up and make sure you have some wing under you and have some track under you too to kind of hold the car. But
right.
You know, Sam was really lucky that, you know, when he had that issue kind of go down at the end of the race, it, you know, Aaron had an issue too. Aaron knocked the nose wing up and lost all of his front downforce, and it just wasn't. It's tough to run these things without a nose wing, and you get to the cushion, it's just uncomfortable to drive. The front end has no stick. You're just all over the place, and
right.
You know, it was actually really good that, like I said, they both had an issue about the same time. So, you know, let's say Aaron doesn't have the nose wing issue, and Sam doesn't have brakes, and starts making mistakes.
Right.
You know, Aaron might get by him.
Right.
So it's just. It's crazy how that stuff can just strike at, you know.
Once that nose wing folded back, it was over at that point.
It was
right?
pretty much over. It was a handful of laps to go. I'm looking at here, and they were kind of in clean air at that point. At least Sam was, and Aaron was going to have to make a big run or have Sam make a big mistake, and that just wasn't going to happen.
How did you like Sam talking a little shit on Aaron after that race?
As a fan, I thought that was entertaining as hell.
Yeah, I did too.
I loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
What'd you know, I got no dog in the hunt. That was great.
What'd you think about that? Do you think it was a valid point what Sam had to say?
Yeah, because Aaron kind of forced the issue on the front stretch. You know, Sam. It wasn't like Sam came off the bottom and drove it straight to the fence. I mean, Sam was down like a little bit.
He was off the wall a little bit.
It wasn't like too bad where he just, you know, came across Aaron's left front, and that's just how Aaron is, and Aaron doesn't care if he turns you or runs you over. And I think, you know, there's not a lot of Aaron Reisel fans. There's some, but I think the majority of the fans there and fans that watch the race and know about this, you know, appreciate it.
Well, let me just tell you this. Though, I'm to be honest with you, I'm kind of an Aaron Reisel fan.
Well, you like that kind of, you like those kind of racers.
I like people that are.
That's your style.
I like people that are a little rough.
Because that's the way you drove, isn't it?
Well, sometimes I did. Yeah, sometimes I did.
No, when Sam said, he's over there and I'm here.
Right. That was good. How about Justin Sanders? He ended up having a good run there, didn't he?
I told you to keep an eye on him.
Yeah, yeah. He got around.
Nobody believed that Justin would come out there, even though he's from California and has short track experience like this, that he would do good. And I'm glad he ran well. I just finally backed up, you know what I said about him. And you know, he had a rough first night where he just, you know, Howard Moore broke and he had nowhere to go, and it. Luckily, it didn't tear anything up besides wings, and he had a decent night on Friday night, and it put him in a good spot on Saturday. And like I said, you got to start up front at Little Rock with the caliber of cars. You just got to start up front. It's just too hard to pass everybody.
A great example of that, what you just said, is Blake Hahn.
Exactly.
Blake Hahn started 10th last or Saturday night, and he ran 5th. But I'm telling you right now, I think Blake Hahn was as fast as the leaders. Because he was ripping around some pretty good cars. He got around Dylan Westbrook. He got around Wayne Johnson. He got around Jason Martin, Derek Hagar. Those are some good cars.
And on a track, on a night that was hard to pass.
Right.
He was able to pull off what he did.
Yeah.
I thought, based on the track conditions, Blake Hahn did very well.
I did, too.
My pick didn't do so well. Ryan Timms, he finished last.
Right. Yeah, he didn't have a very good night there as well. So do you think if that nose wing doesn't fold back, Reisel wins?
I think he has a better shot than he did at the end of the race, but what if a yellow comes out? Timms had one yellow.
What Blake Hahn needed, really.
Yeah, I mean, what if we had a yellow
with
10 to go?
That was a long run with green flag laps there at the end of that race, right? There was I think the 6 car brought out, the 6G car brought out a caution, And Ryan Timms brought out a caution. Those are the only two cautions of the night.
And they were really early in the race. So
yeah, they were early.
They ran almost 25 maybe laps, you know, green.
41 lap race.
Yeah.
But it was good action, even though, as Alston pointed out, the track positioning was, you know, very tough. It was hard to pass. There was still a lot of action in that race.
No, I agree. Was anybody a little disappointed with Derek Hagar's run? He ended up running ninth. Well, didn't you think he'd do a little better than that? Anybody?
Kurt? Yeah, I thought he might do better, but again, it was a situation where it was just hard to work around people.
He started 16th. He ran 9th.
The fact that he started 16th and ran 9th, I suppose, based on the track conditions, was pretty good. Maybe you might have thought he would have done better, but again, it was hard to pass.
Yeah, no doubt. What do you think about Hagar and another person that really didn't have a good run and was hoping to have a good run because, you know, everybody was kind of pulling for Tim Crawley. He started 13th. He ran 11th. He didn't have a good run either. Talk about Austin, Derek Hagar, and Tim Crawley and their runs the other night. What do you think about that?
Just goes back to, like I said, track position.
Starting position.
You had 84 cars signed in.
Right.
And there was a lot of cars that were, everybody has good equipment, and everybody has, you know, equipment that can win. And that whole field, in the feature where they start 24 cars down there,
it's 20.
I know they always, they're different than most places, but
it's small track.
Yeah. You know, all 20 cars could win that race on any given night. It just depends on where you start. And then, you know, you see it really in sprint car racing a little bit that, you know, the first, you know, three or four rows, they get out there, and that's really the only cars you're racing with. Everybody, you know, they have the cleanest air, you know, at the start of the race, and everybody's right back there in the back just kind of stuck, and you can't make any big runs at the beginning of the race. It takes those guys a while to get stuff built up, and, you know, I think if the track for Hagar, at least, was maybe a little slicker and slower, maybe like a race we saw back in, I think they went down there in March or April.
Right.
Hagar would have been good. Maybe for Crawley, too.
Let me just say this. That track was extremely fast all weekend.
It was.
It was really faster than I've seen it in several years. Every night that we were there, the track was just lightning fast. Would you agree with that, Austin?
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, plenty of moisture across it where you could make a big run on the top, and then you could, you know, come through 3 and 4 and slide it through the middle and still have grip and not have consequences for leaving the top.
And I will say this, it was a little rugged. Over there in turn 3, there was a pretty good trench over there in turn 3, and there was a lot of guys that were struggling with that as well. So the track was fast and a little rough. That's not always a good combination either.
No, but it wasn't like a rough that was too rough. We've seen too rough before.
It was pretty darn rough over in turn 3.
It wasn't like Ozark bad.
It was pretty close.
I don't think so. Did you guys? I'm not going to go there. But
hold on. I walked through the ditch up there in turn 3.
Yeah, you guys didn't crash 10 cars in the first 10 attempts at the green. So it just made some character to it.
You're just too hard on Lake Ozarks.
They deserve it. I'm sorry.
You got to let it go. Let it go, Austin. I know it cost you some money, but you just got to let it go, bud.
And if it got better since then, I would. Mm-hmm. They continue to drive themselves into a deeper hole every time they have a race there.
You know, Matt,
I think that it's gotten better.
No.
I do.
I was going to say, Matt Covington had to come out of the B main.
Yep.
And then he started dead last and ended up 12th right behind Tim Crawley. I think that's an example of he did about as good as he could do based on how hard it was to pass.
Yep, no doubt.
That's a prime example of how difficult it was to work your way up from the back.
Well, Derek Hagar had to come out of the B too.
Yep.
Yeah. So did Jordan Mallett. Jordan Mallett got lapped, and there's a guy that almost won the Short Track Nationals last year.
He did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you look at 84 drivers, 20 of them make the A main. I mean, just to make the A was quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. So Aaron Reitzel led lap 1 through 17. Sam Heyfertig, he led 18 through 41. That's about just about splitting it down the middle, isn't it?
Hey, I want to talk about the pre-race ceremony that they had before the races ever started. They brought all the drivers that ever competed at I-30 Speedway out on the racetrack for the
and
prayer and the
members.
National anthem. And they interviewed the Clays, Tracy and Joe Jr. down there, and it got pretty emotional down there. But that was really something. If you have access to the video, if you haven't seen it, go back and take a look at it. That was really something to watch.
And then after the races, I don't know if you know this, Kirk, but they allowed all the fans to come down and walk around the racetrack for the final time.
They left the live video up for quite a while after the race as fans
went out
onto the racetrack. It was they had the track, you know, speedy shot, but they showed, you know, Tim Crawley had his car out on the track and people come down and talk, but a lot of people didn't want to leave right away after the races. They wanted to hang around.
Let me tell you, when I walked back from the start-finish line after the victory lane, and I walked back, there was people just sitting on the racetrack.
Didn't want to leave.
Did not want to leave. Yeah, it was pretty good stuff.
Sad when you see a racetrack, and we've got two other racetracks that are going to go through the same thing, I-80 and Devil's Bowl Speedway.
Hold on. And Grandview.
Right.
Is going to be gone as well.
That too.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue on with Mostly Motorsports. Kirk Elliott sitting in the house with us. We'll open up the phone lines if you'd like to call in. Sam Heyfertig is going to join us here next on Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Sure, especially sportswear in-house. We do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, and make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must-play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
Three nine-hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor. Kirk Elliott sitting in with us today on Mondays, as he does each and every Monday and Friday. Austin O'Neill, producer, helping us out here, does a great job. Joining us now on the show is the winner of the final Short Track Nationals down at I-30 Speedway, Sam Hafertief. Sam, how you doing, bud?
Man, I'm doing really good. Doing really good.
You're doing great, man. That was a hell of a run that you made there, bud. Let me ask you what your thoughts were when Aaron was out there in the lead and you were running second. Did you feel at the time that you had enough to run him down and get around him?
Yeah, I mean, early on I was just kind of, if he ran the bottom of one and two, I'd run the top. If he ran the bottom of three and four, I tried the top early a few times. We had the caution, and then we kind of redid again, and I checked the top one and two just to see if the bottom was making ground on the top. And then same thing in three and four, kept searching across there, which is also the good thing for, being the guy in second. Get to move around and see if you're gaining on the guy in front of you or not. So I was kind of just trying to figure out where the best approach would be to try to run him down. I knew probably about lap 10, once we got restarted and actually going green, that we had enough to gain on him and catch him, and then it was going to be basically how we caught traffic, how things went. And I felt like, if I pressured him a little bit, I'd make him overdrive the top, and honestly, that's exactly what he did. I think he saw me in the bottom one and two, the lap that he did mess up in three and four there, and
right.
I think he probably drove into three and four a little harder than he had, and kind of tripped up in the curb a little bit, and we were able to get by him, and then after that, it was just basically, for me, just managing the race.
Yeah, it seemed like to me, Sam, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I might be. But it seemed like the track was really fast all weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they kept it, they kept a little more moisture in it than we're used to seeing there, which honestly probably played more into his hands than mine. But, I knew that either way we were going to have to, if the track ended up that way, we were going to have to figure out a way to make our car work good in those situations. And we did that. I felt like, it's definitely a different racetrack than we're used to seeing, but, it wasn't anything that we couldn't handle.
Right, yeah, no doubt about it. They had that little rough spot down there in three. How did that affect you? Because I know that you said after the race that you didn't have brakes. When did you lose your brakes? Well, do you know what lap about you lost your
brakes? I mean, they were just slowly fading all race.
Yeah.
Just because we had actually our throttle was sticking is why we lost them. Pretty much burning them up all the way through the corners, trying to get the car to slow down, which honestly hurt us in the bottom of 3 and 4 is kind of why I moved up to the middle, because I couldn't get it slowed down enough to really rotate and run around the bottom the way I needed to. Even in 1 and 2, it was like that. So I knew I had to make a change in the race car to combat my problem, and what fixed it was actually the middle groove in 3 and 4. I don't think the middle groove was good for everybody, but it was good for me in the circumstance I had, you know, because like I say, once you dump throttle, you couldn't get it to slow down enough. So we just, you know, we burned the brakes up doing that. And I think as the race went on, they slowly faded. And then actually, you don't really notice you don't have any brakes until you actually get to the scales and you're trying to really use them to get stopped, right. and you don't have any. So it was one of those things where, you know, luckily we got in the right spot at the right time and took advantage of his mishap in 3 and 4. And then, like I say, got in there and just managed my race from that point on.
All right, so I'm going to bring up what you said after the race. You kind of talked a little shit on Aaron Reitzel a little bit. I want you to take me through the sequence of events and why you brought that up in Victory Lane. Can you do that for me?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, and honestly, it's not just from one occurrence with him. It's several, right. You know, and it's not just me. It's a lot of guys, you know, around. You know, he has a bad reputation for running into people and things like that. And you know, like what led up to that, I guess, you know, after I watched the video a couple of times, you know, I'd been running the bottom, you know, the middle of 3 and 4 and running the top of 1 and 2 pretty consistently, probably, you know, ever since I passed him. You know, I'd run the bottom of 1 and 2 a couple of times, but, you know, not very often. Like if I had to pick at that point in the race, I was going to the top of 1 and 2. And I honestly think that, you know, like, he knew I was coming up. You know, he always, you know, like, he does that to a lot of people. He clips guys in the right rear. You know, he does a lot of malicious things inside a race car. And you know, just, you know, after a while, you just get tired of it, you know. It just,
yeah.
You know, it's, you know, a lot of guys have been fed up with it for a long time. And, you know, it's just a situation where, you know, a lot of guys get fed up with it and, you know, we came out on top and, you know, we were able to call him out on it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. This being the last short track nationals, I'm sure you were highly motivated to try to win this race because everybody wants to win the last one, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody, you know, I mean, when you get guys like us up front, I mean, we're motivated to win no matter what. But, you know, that being the last one and that being such a – I don't know. Like, I've raced there at that track probably more than – the only other track I maybe raced at anymore was, you know, Devil's Bowl.
Right,
and
yeah.
Honestly, like, to see that place go and felt like I should have won that race so many times and we'd only won it once.
Right.
You know, it definitely – put a little more out there for me, you know. I mean, and I, you know, like, and like for, you know, like in Aaron's situation, he'd never won it. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think in the future you had the two guys that probably wanted to win it more than anybody else running 1-2, and I don't think you could ask for, you know, a better race than that in that situation.
Man, I hate to bring it up, but there's rumors floating around that maybe Devil's Bowl might be going away. How And we're losing I-80, Grandview's going away, I-30 Speedway, possibly Devil's Bowl. Man, this is a strange time for us in the racing world, isn't it, right now?
Yeah, I've tried to explain to people, like, especially to lose, like, a Devil's Bowl and a I-30.
Right.
Those two places are pretty big places for 360 racing in the South. And,
no doubt.
You know, to lose two racetracks of that magnitude that, you know, put on so many shows through the years for 360 racing, you know, losing a short track nationals, like, you know, even if another track says, oh, we're going to continue the short track nationals or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the same, you know, to build something for 35 years and it to be gone. And then if we lose Devil's Bowl too, I mean, it's a pretty big hit to the racing industry, you know, down in this area for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So your conversation with Tracy Clay, I know that you've got a pretty good relationship with her. What was your conversation with her and the family about them selling the racetrack? Did you have a one-on-one conversation with Tracy about that?
Actually, you know, Joe Sr. came to me earlier in the week, and you know, and which I thought was really cool. And he pulled up in his white truck, and he said, "Sam," he goes, "I just want to tell you, I've always appreciated you coming here, and you know, we've always liked having you, and you know, just some guy, you know, just a guy, any guy at any racetrack would come up to you and say that it means a lot to you."
Yeah.
But then coming from him, you know, racing there for so many years, it was definitely pretty touching to me. You know, obviously, you know, gave all those guys a hug and, you know, told them thanks for what they've done for so long. And you know, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be tough to fill those shoes. But, I mean, I'm sure somebody's going to step up there and maybe try to do something. But, like I say, it just won't be the same.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So what's the plans for you, Sam? I know that you've been doing some 410 racing, and you've done quite a bit of that this year. I hate to say it, but, you know, 360 racing is kind of taking a backseat to 410 racing right now. It seems like 410 racing is making a comeback right now. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you look where 410 racing is headed right now, I mean, the purses are super high compared to what they've used to be. Everything in 410 racing is trending upwards. And honestly, you know, not to knock anything, but, you know, our ASCS purses are, you know, as low as they've been in 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, 360 racing in general is not thriving as well as it used to. And I don't even know the reason for it, to be honest.
It's got to be the money, though, doesn't it, Sam? Really, to be honest with you?
At the end of the day, it's all about the money.
Yeah.
You know, somehow, some way, they're being able to promote 410 races and put the money out there, and that's where the people are at. And you know, that's just the trend of the sport right now. And, I mean, I hate it because 360 racing is so big. There's so many people that have engines. There's you know, there's so many 360 engines out there. There's so many more cars that are 360 race cars out there. And, I hate to see it start doing this and trending this way. But, yeah, I mean, 410s, I mean, I'm not going to say they're taking over, but they're definitely the more dominant right now for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Do you think that the reason 410 racing is making a kind of a comeback right now, you know, I say this all the time, Sam, and there's nobody better that knows this better than you, because you are a five-time ASCS National Tour champion. Let me just say this. Do you think when the Ford motor came in to 360 racing, it drove the cost up of the motors, and then that's when people started saying, "Well, listen, if I'm going to pay that much for a 360, I might as well go ahead and buy a 410. Do you think there's any reason for that to be legit, do you think?
No, not totally, because, I mean, you know, in the 410 world, you've had, you know, the likes of, you know, Casey Kane Racing and the likes of Tony Stewart Racing and,
right,
you know, the Ford engine development there. I mean, they've drove cost up there too. Not that I'm bitching about it. It's just, you know, that's the reality of the situation. You know, anytime you have a competitive series like that and you have owners willing to pay the money that it costs to go race, and, mm-hmm, you know, these people, I mean, everybody says racing's dying or whatever, was dying. There's more people racing now than there's been in years, and the costs are higher than they've ever been. So nobody really has a reason to quit charging more, or, you know, it just, I don't know. I don't think it's the motor costs. I don't think it's any of that. I just think that, you know, the purses aren't going up. 410 purses are going up, and people see that. So it's, you know, it's driving more people that way.
Yeah. I noticed Dylan was there at Eldora. Is he going to be doing some more 410 racing next year? Do you know, or can you speak on that?
I don't know how much 410 racing he's planning on doing going into next year. I know he'll be at the World Finals this year for Charlotte to finish out the year. And then, you know, as far as next year, I don't know their plans. I know our plans are pretty well. You know, we ran, you know, I don't know, probably 15 360 shows this year, and we'll probably take some of those out of the schedule next year and add more 410 races in place of them.
You know,
we might run a handful of 360 races, but it won't be a lot.
Yeah, Right. Well, again, it really all boils down to the amount of money that it pays. And when you have a race that pays like Short Track Nationals paid in $15,000 to win, that's a good enough incentive to go and run that race, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah, you know, that's why I thought the field this year was the best field they've had in over 5 years, because of the purse. You know, the purse was 15 again. You know, years ago it used to be 15 to win, 2,500 start, but they didn't really pay much on the first two nights. And now,
right,
you know, guys bitch enough about it, they made changes in their deal where they're paying the first two nights and, you know, the first two features this year, and they're paying the final night. So they did everything they should have done to make the race bigger, and I think you saw that this weekend with the quality of cars we had in the A main event.
Yeah. So do you know exactly what your plans are going to be? Are you going to run for points next year, or are you just going to run an outlaw schedule?
You know, we're still up in the air. You know, obviously, you know, we'd like to run like the World of Outlaw deal, but, you know, it comes down to more than just wanting to. You have to have all the pieces in place, and, you know, it takes a lot to make that happen. So, you know, we'll assess that over the wintertime and see if it's something feasible we can do. And if not, you know, we'll probably do like a traditional outlaw schedule where we're kind of all over the place. It just really depends, yeah, you know, how our help situation is and things like that.
Yeah. Is it easier, and you can answer this as well as anybody, is it easier to run with the All-Stars than the Outlaws because of the quantity of dates they have?
Well, I think the All-Star deal is really good because they have enough, like, they'll have a weekend off here or there, or there's times you can go run, like, some PA Speed Week stuff. You know, you can go run, you know, they book, like, a five-day stretch out in PA this last year. They have a lot of good dates on their schedule, and that's why I think you'll see a lot of guys next year maybe pull off the outlaw schedule. And with the, you know, with the midweek deal with the high limit series coming on, yeah, I mean, I think that you'll see people running a lot of all-star stuff, running a lot of midweek stuff, you know, running a lot of Pennsylvania stuff. I think you'll see the trend of outlaw teams kind of go down a little bit just because there are so many more money shows coming out there, and you know, when you're running full time on the Outlaws, you can only run their shows. So unless the Outlaws do something to kind of, you know, up the intake for all these other drivers that are running their series, I think you'll see some guys maybe try to branch out and maybe run more traditional outlaw schedules.
How many of those high limit races are you planning on running next year? Are you going to try to run the most of those, or do you know?
Yeah,
yet?
It really just depends. If we run a full outlaw schedule, then obviously we won't run any of them. If we run,
right,
you know, an open schedule, we'll probably run all of them.
Gotcha. Well, Sam, I can't tell you how thrilled everybody was to see you win down there. I know the fans were pulling for you. There was two people I think a lot of the fans were pulling for. They were pulling for Sam, and they were pulling for Tim. Tim didn't have a good run. You ended up winning the race. What would you like to say to the people that go to I-30 Speedway and the people that are listening right now? We've got a lot of people that listen from Pennsylvania, Ohio, New Jersey, New York, Florida. Just kind of sum up what it meant for you to win the final Short Track Nationals down at Little Rock.
Well, you know, this is a hard race for us to determine where we want to go. I mean, you've got National Open that pays $75,000 to win up in Pennsylvania. Yeah. I always enjoy racing up there. But, you know, we did choose to go to Little Rock. And mainly because it's just a place that means a lot to me. Like I say, I think I've turned laps there for 20 years now. And it's really cool to see the amount of fans that we did have there. It's real humbling to, you know, there's a handful of boos you always hear, but it was really humbling to hear that many people cheering for you, you know, after we won that race. Yeah. And it was honestly, it was the weekend that I really wanted it. It turned out exactly how I wanted it to turn out. I wanted to beat the best car there, and I wanted to have to battle for it. And we did that, and it wasn't handed to us by any means. And that makes the race even that much sweeter.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Sam, we want to thank you for taking the time to join us here on Mostly Motorsports. I appreciate it. You always say yes, you never say no, and I'm thankful for that. And congratulations on the win down at the Short Track Nationals, man. That was a fantastic win, outrunning. He might be a heel, but he is a wheeling. That guy can wheel a race car, man. Aaron Reitzel can, and you outran him, and you did it fair and square, and it was really fun to watch, man. Congratulations to you.
Well, I appreciate it, Scott, and like I say, I'm glad to come on anytime.
All right. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate you.
All right. See you, buddy.
All right. There you go. There you have Sam Haverchief joining us on the show. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more motorsports right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Here at Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, to make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
3 9 hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. So the great track tribute of Ascot Park is done up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, but you still have time to purchase your Sprint Car raffle ticket. And again, they're giving away a 2022 Triple X chassis, a complete 410 Sprint Car, and they're giving you $25,000 to pay for the taxes as well. They're going to be giving that away on Friday, December 16th. Gosh, I just hope everybody else got up there and had a chance to see that great track tribute of Ascot Park, man. It was so good. It's over with now, though. And you can still buy the Sprint Car Raffle ticket. You can do so by going to sprintcarraffle.com. Or you can go to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum and check it out in person. It's still a great visit. Anytime you go to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, Kirk, it's always good, isn't it? There's a lot of great things to look at up there, isn't there?
Yeah, and it's, I think they only shut down, a couple of holidays a year? That's it. Thanksgiving, Christmas.
Right.
That's about it.
I'll tell you when they shut down. I have it here.
Open every day.
And some of my notes, I guess I don't have it. I used to have it. I don't have it anymore. I used to have it. I don't have it now.
What happened to it?
I don't know. It disappeared. I don't know. I don't know what happened
to it. They got that new Corvette for next year up there, too, that you can buy tickets for as well.
Have they started selling the tickets for that yet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they put out some emails. We'll put a link up on our social media pages today.
Get up there and buy the Sprint Car Raffle ticket, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So.
You see a little Bristol walking around over here?
I have. I didn't see her on Saturday morning, though. She must have stayed upstairs with Deidre.
She must have stayed up there with you. So get up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, buy you a raffle ticket, or do it online at sprintcarraffle.com. Or you can call them. If you're not comfortable putting your credit card information online, you can always call them up and do it at 641-842-6176. That's 641-842-6176. All right, so let's we had to kind of keep a little bit of a secret last week.
I didn't do a very good job of keeping that secret. I spit it out.
You almost blew it on Friday, didn't he, Austin?
Well, he almost, a little bit, but, you know, I'm thinking I wanted to announce it or say that we had a motor lined up, one day last week, but I just knew my luck. I would make an announcement and have the hype behind it, and then we get to end of the week and either something on my end falls apart or on the motor side of it, and I'm sitting here like,
you're too paranoid, Austin.
I guess I just my luck this year. You got to be cautious on some.
But it didn't fall apart. You had a motor and you were a factor on Saturday night.
Yeah.
A big factor.
So there was two or three laps to go, you were running third, and you blew a left rear tire, right?
Yeah, thanks, Hoosier.
Thanks, Hoosier.
That's about what it comes down to be. But, no, we had a – that was a long Saturday because we get up, we're out of town by about 9 o'clock. My buddy Riley Kreisel came with us, so I was waiting on him to show up and hit the road and got up to Lincoln.
You mean Riley was late getting there?
No, Riley was on time, but getting everybody else ready to go.
Right.
We were a little behind schedule. Got up to Speedway Motors engine shop about 1 o'clock.
So let's just say you ran a Speedway motor, a house motor. Right?
Yeah, so if it wasn't for Zach Woods and Speedway Motors racing engines for allowing us to run their house motor, my season was over. For Zach to be gracious enough to let me run it just one night, means a lot to us, and to show that we're gonna be a paying customer for quite some time now, and have him give us a chance to kind of get a first taste of it or a first race. And
did it seem to run better?
Yeah, it was. So compared to my Westmar, that one was way better. And talking to Zach after the races that the motor that I will get back from him will be better than when I ran. So, we're going to come into next year with a really good motor. And And, you know, we're going to be better off than we were the past, you know, 3 or 4 years now. And
you're excited about it. I can tell.
Well, we are. All of us are excited because we know we have the equipment that is capable of winning. And we proved that Saturday night. It's just, you know, the biggest thing that we lacked was just power and motor. And, you know, we finally got out there on a motor that was capable of winning. And you know, the motor that we ran, Jack Dover ran a couple of times throughout the summer. And I believe he might have won with it one night or ran right up in the top three. So, you know, it just, the cards fell right. We had a good pill draw. And, you know, we won the heat race. I had to win the heat race from the pole to, you know, hopefully have a shot at locking into the redraw. And I was the sixth and final car in the redraw. And, you know, Dover was fifth. And there was two pills left, a two and a four. And he pulled the two. So, I mean, I would have rather had him pull the four and give me the two. But
right.
I'll take the four over the six any day of the week. And,
right, got it.
You know, it's just I took off on the start, and, you know, we kind of – I got to get better on starts with this. So this motor had a different style injection on it, a couple different settings on it. So it took off a little different than my Westmar
did. Did it stumble a little bit?
No, it actually took off really good, and it was better than mine used to. So I wasn't used to it, and kind of blew the tires off of it a couple times and gave up a lot of ground into one, and it allowed Carson McCall to slide me one lap. And I was able to cross Carson back and drive away from him, and it was just me, Chris Martin, and Jack Dover all running 1, 2, 3. Actually, Chris Martin was leading, and we ran, you know, within a straightaway of him the entire race. And, you know, it took rubber about halfway through, and I knew that, you know, tire wear was going to be an issue. And, you know, we put a new set of rear tires on it and hoping that they would last. And the right rear was pretty much, you know, as slick when we pulled in. And, you know, with about 5 to go, I looked at the scoreboard, and I was getting ready to lap Clint Gardner, and I'm like, all right, if I get by Clint, I got some clear track in front of me, and I can just kind of sit there and ride around.
Run it too hard.
I didn't hear Carson for a while, and, you know, I make one lap kind of running at a conservative pace and go down into three, and the left rear just blows. And it's not a great feeling, but, you know, I think it kind of turned some heads and showed people that, we can do it, and we belong at, you know, the highest level of 360 racing in the Midwest. So, you know, like I said, it shows that, you know, when everything is right and we have, you know, the best equipment, you know, we are capable of winning races and being there at the end. So, like I said, if it wasn't for Zach and Speedway for giving us this opportunity, this wouldn't happen. And I'm really glad he did. I hope Zach's excited. I think he is for next year. And I think, you know, it's going to be a good year. It should be really good. Hopefully we can finally get us a win. We're so close. It's just, you know, we're finally putting these, like, smaller pieces in to get us to that point, and I think this is the last one to get us there.
Right. So it had a pretty good car count up there. What, about 35 cars, right?
Yeah, we had about, 35, and, you know, a lot of Knoxville cars. And, you know, one thing I didn't factor into the car count for this weekend was that the Outlaws will be here, I think, in 2 weeks. So, you know, you had like a Roger Crockett, both McCarls. I think Clint might run his 410. Dover's going to be there, of course. And Linton Jeffrey was there. Linton started on the inside
Clint
of
Gardner.
Me. Yeah. And so all those guys that have 360s now also have 410s. And with the Outlaws coming in, you know, it's an easy, and with it paying good, it was perfect time to get a good warm-up session and have notes built for the Outlaw show.
Justin Henderson was there, too.
Hold on. Yeah. Let me ask you something. Did you go back out, or did you just park it when you blew the left rear tire? Did you just park it, or did you put another left rear on and go back out?
If it was earlier in the race, I probably would have went to the work area. But with having three laps to go,
yeah,
there was no sense in going back out there and knowing the right rear was about to go too. I mean, the pay didn't.
It wasn't worth
it. I think it started increasing around like 10th or 11th or 12th, and at that point there was still about 15 cars or so left on the track, and I wouldn't have been able to drive, you know, around those guys in the rubber to get by them. And it just you know, it was just, I wish I could have went back out there, but, you know, it's better off just to park it and
don't take a chance tearing up your stuff.
Exactly. And also too, when it blew, it was kind of weird the way it let go. Is we looked at the tire carcass that was left, and it's like it delaminated. Even though it was being worn through rubber, there were still chunks of the tire that had decent-ish, you know, tread left on the tire. So it's like the tire just gave a part, and when it did, it it came out like the top of the tire, and it ripped the siren on the left side arm guard panel. It disintegrated that to 1,000 pieces. That's gone. Nerf bar was gone. It slapped the bottom of the wing, and it bent the left rear radius rod. So if I would have went back out there, I mean, I had...
You would have been all messed up.
It would have hurt some things, and like I said, it's just better off parking it and collecting your $500 and going home.
Yeah. And if you would have finished that, I mean, you would have finished third, no doubt about that, just watching that race. You were in a pretty solid third-place finish. If that tire hadn't gone, you would have won a heat, made the redraw, and finished third in a feature event that had a pretty good quality field of cars. That would have been really something for you to pull that
Crockett
off.
Crockett wasn't that close to you, was he?
No, so it was... So Chris Martin and Jack Dover had about a straightaway-ish on me. Then I had about a straightaway, half straightaway on Carson. Yeah. And then Carson, or Roger was behind Carson. But at the first start of the race, Matt Jewell caused a red on the first lap. But if Matt doesn't have that problem, I'm sliding Jack Dover into three for third. And Linton and Chris Martin are going at it. So, you know, those two were getting ready to slide each other going into one when the red came out. So I could have had a big run built up and drove by both of them. Maybe, you know, Chris, because he was getting slid by Linton, and we might be sitting here running second or racing Linton for the lead. So there was just a lot of different scenarios that could have played out in the feature, and that might have changed some things. But, you know, I would have been pleased with a third-place finish. You know, we went up there twice and ran fourth both times. So I was hoping we could have been, you know, two spots better. But, I mean, still for a third after, you know, dropping a motor in 4 hours before hot – or 2 hours before hot laps and going out there and running for the first time since July 20th, I would have been fine with a third-place finish.
Yeah, I mean, you had a car capable of winning up there. I mean, that's the bottom line. And to make the redraw and get a podium finish, that tire hadn't gone down, that would have been terrific.
You know, Caleb said, I knew what he was stepping into more when Scott reacted so hard to Kirk on Friday.
Everybody knew it. big night for Chris Martin, who was the feature winner.
Chris Martin's a good guy, man. Yep. I like Chris a lot. And, you know, he traveled with the Luxor ASES National Tour for a year. And I think a lot of him. He's a good guy. So... it says, here Marie says, hey, Austin, Brent Marks took the Hoosier sign out when he flipped Friday night at the Grove.
Yeah.
He helped show what you drivers think about the tires.
That was a wild flip that Brent
Marks
took.
I didn't get to see it.
Yeah, he went through that billboard and ended up in that outer fence beyond the third and fourth turn.
Let me say something. Why in the world do we have billboards that drivers can go through? Didn't we learn something from Jason Johnson's death?
Yeah. This billboard, though, is pretty collapsible.
No.
This was not the same kind of billboard.
It wasn't?
No.
No, it was a little plywood.
It was just a kind of a temporary. He went through that. That was really not that big of a danger.
Can not a board hit you in the head when you're going through a billboard?
Yeah, but I don't think there was boards or lumber with it. I think it was just kind of a billboard that easily folded up when he hit it.
I'm never going to like billboards.
Well, the billboard was about 75, 50 feet off a wall.
I don't care. The first thing that you should hit is a fence, not a billboard.
But wasn't it made out of vinyl or something?
I don't care what it's made out of. You should hit a fence before you hit a billboard.
Sometimes hitting a fence on top of the wall is worse than leaving the track.
But it was not like the billboards that Jason Johnson hit. It's not like that.
There's nothing better than catching a fence with some cables in it.
Yeah,
I'd rather take my chances with a fence and cables in it any day than going through a damn sign. All right. Here's Caleb. He said, hey, Scott, you've been rubbing off on Austin. He's really sharing his opinions this episode. How about that, Austin?
Well, he always does, doesn't he?
He always does. Yeah.
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 Austin always brings it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not afraid to.
So that whole experience up there left a pretty good taste in your mouth for the off season, did it not? That was huge.
It's just too bad I only have one more go at it. But yeah, like.
Can we see can you pull up that video real quick, Austin, or is it too late to do that?
I can pull it up, but yeah, I mean,
I'll look at it after the race.
It finally gave us that. We always go in the off season with a torn up race car. It's just always how it happens, or a motor issue. But finally going into the off season with minimal things to replace and a good outlook for the rest of the year, like you said, Kirk, it gives us a lot of excitement and promise to next year. And I think we have some ideas of what we're going to do to make some stuff better. We'll do that along with this, and we finally feel confident enough that, you know, we can either go to Knoxville and run good at Knoxville now, or we can go to these you know, national tier races or shows at place, or one-off shows like I-80. I wish we would be going back there. I feel like I'm finally just getting going there for the future. So I think, like I said, hopefully next year has better things for me. I don't, you know, I get to race more than 9 times.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, too bad I-80 is not an option for anybody now.
Yeah. Hey, quickly, before we get out of here, Knoxville Raceway is named Jason Reed as the new general manager. At one time, he was the former Merriam County Fair Board president, Jason Reed, and now he is the general manager of Knoxville Raceway. What do you think about that, Kurt?
Effective immediately. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. They had the contract with Spire Motorsports. We don't know if that's gone now, or is the fair board just going back to
doing
hiring
their
own GM. It doesn't really make clear in the press release what the case is there, but Jason Reed obviously knows the inner workings of the Marion County Fair Board, so the best of luck to him in the future.
That's what it takes, somebody that really has a relationship with the Fair Board up there at Knoxville.
Well, he would have that.
Yeah, no doubt. So we'll try to get him on this week here on Mostly Motorsports, and we'll try to have a word with him as well. Maybe we can get him on tomorrow. See if we can try to
get a hold of him.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we want to thank everybody for tuning in to Mostly Motorsports. Again, it's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. For Austin O'Neill, for Kirk Elliott, I'm Scott Traylor. We'll see you tomorrow at 12 noon Central Time right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.